Locked On NBA, the biggest stories, the local experts. Every Monday, we dig into the biggest stories in the NBA with the Locked On Podcast Network hosts. Today, we'll stop in Oklahoma City to speak with Brady Trantham of Locked On Thunder about all of the trade targets that currently reside on the Thunder, what they plan to do before the trade deadline, and how the mood is with this surprise team for this season. We go to Boston to speak with John Corrales of Locked On Celtics about Kemba Walker's knee injury, any trades that may be brewing for Boston, and what that means for the remainder of this season. And lastly, we go to Milwaukee to speak with Kane Pittman of Locked On Bucks about the best team in the NBA, how well they're playing, and what could possibly trip them up as the season continues. It's all coming up, the biggest stories with the local experts on Locked On NBA.
You are Locked On the NBA, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome back to another week of Locked On NBA. I am your Monday host, Josh Lloyd. I'm also the host of the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast and the lead analyst at BasketballMonster.com and at Yahoo Sports Australia. The trade deadline 4 or 5 days away. Lots of interesting stories brewing with that one across the NBA landscape. So we're going to talk about that and check in on one of the best teams in the NBA as well. So let's get to it. Now we bring in the host of the Locked On Thunder podcast. Brady Trantham is here with us, and we're only a few days away from the trade deadline, Brady, so I thought it was a good idea to check in with you and the Thunder, talking about a team that's had multiple people spill lots of speculation regarding the future of many players on this team. Chris Paul, Dennis Schroeder, Steven Adams, Danilo Gallinari, thinking everyone is going to be traded, this team's going to be tanking, but where are we at with this Thunder team?
Yeah, it's a good question because, like you said, like there are about 4 or 5 players that could easily be traded, and like it seems like everybody on Twitter, from an opposing fan base standpoint, will say like, "What players do we need?" And it's always kind of goes back to like, "Well, probably somebody from the Thunder, like that would work, right? They're trying to tank, right?" And you can have that mentality, I guess. But really, as it's played out this season, it's kind of interesting. The Thunder have just been pretty darn successful, to say the least. And I mean, surprisingly so to some, but I mean, as long as you have Chris Paul, and this is like my fault, this is everybody's fault that didn't think about it, but as long as you have Chris Paul, you're too good to be bad. I mean, he's that good of a player still. He moves the needle in the NBA. So the Thunder, they have a lot of options presented before them, and it really just comes down to whatever Sam Presti gets in terms of a trade or whatever. As long as it doesn't take too much away from the future, the long term, I'm sure Sam Presti will be open to it.
Because this team at the moment, look, they're comfortably in the playoffs. They're 6 games ahead of the 8th seed, currently in the 7th seed at the moment, and you know, they're only a game out of the 5th seed. So that might be tough for them to get to that level, but it's not outrageous. They are more in the playoffs than out of the playoffs, and it is led by all-star Chris Paul and career performances from guys like Schroeder as well. Who would be the most likely to be dealt if someone is dealt? And do you think the Thunder are proactively looking for this, or they're just receptive to phone calls?
Yeah, I think the Thunder are just more receptive for phone calls because they have a good opportunity to go either way. This team will be blown up at some point, whether it be naturally occurring, whether it be maybe in the offseason with a Danilo Gallinari contract expiring, Chris Paul perhaps being traded around draft night or what have you, because all the reports are kind of going out there that, yeah, he's probably going to finish out the season at least. So that's good for the Thunder in the long term as well, because you're teaching your young core how to win not just basketball games, but important basketball games. Like the playoff experience that Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Darius Bazley, Hamidou Diallo, even a guy like Lou Dort, who's really surprised a lot of people over the last 2 weeks, the playoff experience they're going to have is going to pay dividends down the road once the Thunder eventually get back to the point where they want to be at in terms of title contention, if that does happen. So you don't really have to do that much in terms of trying to, well, we need to deal this guy or deal this guy. It's just more being receptive. But if I had to put a name out there, I mean, it's to me, maybe a Dennis Schroeder, maybe even a Nerlens Noel, who a lot of GMs have been very enamored with, just with his work ethic. The Thunder do a very good job of rehabilitating player reputations. You can go back to guys like Enes Kanter or Dion Waiters. They do a very good job as a franchise doing that. So even still, the Thunder could just very well ride into the postseason with the exact same team, and it really wouldn't shock me.
What would the expectation be on a Thunder team? Is it just, hey, we weren't thinking we were supposed to get here to the playoffs? Would a first-round exit be a disappointment? Do you think they've got, not necessarily the team, but the fan base, like, has the fan base turned around and go, well, this is a pleasant surprise. How fun is this team? This is so good. And then they get into the playoffs and they're like, oh, we're just happy to be here. Or do they think there's more that can come from this team?
Yeah, I mean, I've had a lot of fans just kind of come up to me and tell me, whether in person or on Twitter, that this is one of the more fun seasons they've had watching Thunder basketball. And of course, this franchise has only been around for 10 or 11 years, so they really only know one or two ways. You're either contending for a title with Russell Westbrook, Kevin Durant, or you're watching Russell Westbrook get triple doubles at a historic rate. So with this team, it's a little bit different. I mean, low expectations play into that. So anytime they win, it's a pleasant surprise. And anytime they lose, it's just, well, I mean, that's better for draft positioning, right? That's the whole idea ever since Russell Westbrook and Paul George were traded. So in terms of expectations for the team in the playoffs, really, it just comes down to, A, how high of a seed can they get? Because, they, like you said, they could potentially get the sixth or the fifth seed. That's not out of the realm of possibility. And then whatever seed they do get, what team are they playing? Now, if they're playing like the Clippers, yeah, no one's going to pick them to win a first-round matchup. But if they play Houston or maybe even Dallas, you might get some people that might go out on a limb and say, you know what, I wouldn't be surprised if Oklahoma shocks the world and gets a first-round victory.
The way things are currently sitting, you've got the Nuggets in the 3 seed, the Jazz in the 4, Rockets in the 5, Mavericks in the 6. And you look at those teams, and the Jazz have had hot streaks. They're a little bit cold at the moment. The Nuggets are up and down and dealing with injuries. Houston, of course, has been up and down. And any of those teams, you could see Oklahoma City beating in a 7-game series or in one-off. We've seen that happen already this year. So outside of probably those top two teams, the Lakers and the Clippers, they don't want to be in that 7 seed. If they can push into those other areas, a first-round victory is far from a pipe dream. There is plenty of possibilities there. Last thing I want to talk to you about, Brady, is Steven Adams, who, again, one of those guys rumored to be traded so many times. Atlanta's had interest. Boston's been talked about as a destination. But Adams hasn't really been himself lately. Do you attribute that to the injuries? He's had a couple of ankle problems this season. Last year he'd play 33, 34 minutes. This year he can barely get to 30. Is that a fact of Nerlens Noel playing so well? Is it Adams not playing well? Is it Adams' injuries? Or what has caused the downturn in his production?
Yeah, it's really interesting. I mean, overall, Steven, at least from an offensive standpoint, he is definitely a guy that if he's not anywhere close to 100% on the offensive end, he's not going to be able to give you a lot. Now, defensively, he brings it whether he's 100% healthy or 50% healthy. He just brings it from a hustle standpoint and a basketball IQ standpoint from that end of the floor. This season, you know, Steven Adams starts off the year with a knee contusion or thigh contusion, I can't remember. And that really affected him for the first 3 weeks of the year, and he looked terrible at times offensively. And then he was fully healthy for about a month and a half or two, and he looked every bit the part of a fringe, maybe all-star center that can get you, 18 and 10 on any given night. And then in the last 2 weeks, he actually had another knee contusion. He missed a game or two, I believe, 2 weeks ago. He's since come back, but he's obviously dealing with something. And talking to Billy Donovan the other night, last week after the Thunder defeated the Hawks on a Friday night, Billy just blatantly said, yeah, he's dealing with an ankle right now, but he's tough. And again, it just comes down to Steven. If he's not close to 100% healthy, he's not going to be able to give you that much offensively. But he's definitely a player that can help any team win. He's a player that makes any team better. And even when he's, like I said, not 100% healthy, he still makes the Thunder better, although the numbers would probably suggest otherwise.
There's going to be plenty of speculation over the next 4 to 5 days about this team, Brady. But after that, it'll be smooth sailing towards the playoffs and some excitement, hopefully, for the Thunder fans. You'll have it covered for us all over on Locked On Thunder. Thanks for jumping on Locked On NBA with me.
Hey, Josh, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Let's welcome in now the host of the Locked On Celtics podcast, John Corrales, is here with me to talk about a Boston team who currently sits in the three slot in the Eastern Conference. Just had Jason Tatum named to his first All-Star game. John, I'm going to start first of all. How is Kemba Walker's knee?
Well, it's sore, and it's going to cost him at least one more game, and then they're going to reevaluate It's something that's been kind of ongoing. It cost them a game earlier this season, probably about a few weeks ago, against the Phoenix Suns. And as Brad Stevens says, it's something that they're going to probably have to manage. So the workload that he's going to have to deal with is probably going to be reduced a little bit. They're probably going to keep him closer to his average of 32 minutes per game, which they kind of exceeded on the road trip, the recent road trip to Florida and New Orleans. So I think it's not a huge deal. It's not a long-term thing, but it is something that's going to keep him on the bench for a little bit longer stretches when he does come back.
What is the problem? Like, do we know actually, I've heard, you know, just knee soreness? Is it a bruise? Is it a strain? Like, what's going on?
I feel like it's probably like a tendonitis. They aren't saying necessarily. Kemba did say that he's had some surgeries on his knee, like, and it may be just kind of a residual soreness, but they're not saying anything specific. And it does, like I said, it doesn't seem to be a concern long term. It just seems like something they need to manage. So it does come off as a sort of tendonitis type of thing.
Okay, so that is, you know, we always hear this, but it's someone's knee and it's causing them to miss games. They've always got to have some level of concern. They're not too worried about it. But you know, you still have those worries for a guy that he's not.
Sure.
He's not super old. He's not super young, though. And these minutes, and yeah, he's played 36 minutes a night, you know, in Charlotte for many, many years, and every game, and that sort of stuff does build up on you. So it is a level of concern, I guess. And I wouldn't be as flippant as some of the comments coming out of the Celtics about how we don't seem to be too worried, because if you're missing games, there is something there. But let's move on to a more positive side of things, John. Jason Tatum named to his first All-Star team. Would you have picked him or Jaylen Brown?
Man, it's so close with those two. I mean, every time you think, yeah, I'm leaning towards Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown comes out and has a night like he did last night against who did they play last night? I lost complete track. But whatever it was, those games come up, you know, in cycles for these guys. That Jaylen Brown will go off, and then he missed some time, and he kind of started missing some shots. Then Jason Tatum had like a 41 point game, and it started going off. So flip a coin. Right now, I'm leaning towards Tatum because Tatum has, I think, a little bit more of a workload, and I think he's creating so much. And when you look at Jaylen Brown's stats, he does get a lot of his assists from Jason Tatum, and it's not the other way around. So I think if there's anything that separates those two, it's that Tatum draws a lot of the defense, and Jaylen Brown, for lack of a better term, is swimming in his wake. And that's not it sounds a little on the negative side, but it's something that you need multiple players to do. You need somebody to be the option one, and Jaylen Brown's probably 1A, and he's a really, really great 1A for the Celtics right now. So you can make an argument for either. I guess I'm going a little bit on the Tatum side right now.
I think that's the direction I would go as well with that one. But of course, yeah, Jaylen could have been considered an option there, but I would have Tatum just that little bit higher than him. So I do agree with you there. Trade deadline's coming up, John. The Celtics are always rumored to be in the mix with things. We've heard, you know, looking at Nerlens Noel for about 6 years, it feels like. Yeah, Steven Adams is a name that's been bandied about. They're looking to upgrade that center spot, is the word that we continually hear around. Do you expect the Celtics to be active at all?
I don't expect them to be active as far as the center is concerned, because a guy like Steven Adams makes so much money that they need to throw in a Marcus Smart. They need to throw in one of their core guys. And it's either going to be Gordon Hayward, who just is coming off a really great stretch of games. Didn't play very well against the 76ers on Saturday night, but still a key to their entire offense and defense, by the way. Like, he's out in transition. He's getting turnovers. He's forcing turnovers. He's assisting, getting the secondary assists. So the Celtics just aren't going to give up one of those guys for an expensive option at center. If they do anything, I would expect them to be more on the bench lookout. Like, can somebody fill a scoring role off of their bench without having to give up too much? Can they pair up Semi Ojeleye, Vincent Poirier, and one of their draft picks, maybe a late first rounder, the one either their own or the one that they got from Milwaukee? Can they do that and get somebody decent off the bench? If something like that materializes, then I wouldn't be surprised to see them do something like that.
Yeah, the Adams point is really important because people throw that around, but sending back enough salary to get him for really any team can be a bit of a challenge. And if it's either you have to give up a good player, as you said, like Haywood, or include someone like Smart, or if it's another team looking to get Adams, you have to throw in multiple players who aren't very good. And why would the Thunder want to do that? And that's sort of a handbrake on a deal along those lines. For the Celtics, what have you made of Gordon Hayward's season? Like, he started out really hot, broke his hand, and has seemed to struggle a little bit since returning. Have you seen flashes of him getting back to that early season form? Was that somewhat of an outlier? How is he fitting in? Because I feel like if he can get back to a really strong level of form, he is the key from the Celtics being a Eastern Conference Finals team versus a team that may struggle in the first round.
Yeah, I mean, I've enjoyed Gordon Hayward's season when he's been healthy. He has been hampered, like you said, a foot issue. It's kind of like a residual from that broken ankle that he had, kind of like a nerve thing that he's just kind of been dealing with. So when he's healthy, he seems like he's a very kind of almost similar to what he was in Utah. Aside from this Philly game where he shot 1 for 11, you go back to his last four games, 25, 29, 23, 22 points. All of those games were at or close to 50%. He had a bunch of rebounds, a bunch of assists. He's really been, when he's good, he's really good. When he's not going good, he just tends to miss a bunch of shots and has like a really, really bad night. So Philly was a 1 for 11 night. He had a 1 for 10 night against Milwaukee. Like, he just has, like, when his bad nights are out there, they're really, really bad shooting nights. But he's such a key to their switchability on defense. He has gravity when he has the ball. He has to be respected. And one thing that, a lot, I know we're in this three and layup era, but his mid-range game is important, especially when they face zones. Getting into the middle of a zone and punishing it by hitting 12 footers, it's kind of like an interesting pendulum swing in the NBA, because so much more zone is being played. It's really kind of renewing an emphasis on these mid-range guys, and Hayward, his ability to live and work in that space has really been helpful for the Celtics.
He also, in the flip side to those bad shooting nights, he had that game, I think, against Cleveland where he was about 11 out of 12 or something and shot like 90% from the field and was just not able to miss in stretches. So he's had a lot of that sort of up and down stuff. The Celtics team is always interesting, John. There's always big names and lots of coverage and lots of trade speculation, especially with Danny Ainge's reputation. So we'll see what happens over the next few days and the rest of the season, and you'll have it covered for us all over on Locked On Celtics. Thanks for jumping on Locked On NBA with me.
My pleasure.
Let's bring in the host of the Locked On Bucks podcast now. Kane Pittman is here with me. The Milwaukee Bucks are the best team in the NBA, and it's not particularly close. They are 42-7. The next closest team in the Eastern Conference, the Raptors, are 36-14. The Lakers are 37-11. So there's a five-game buffer as the best team in the league, Kane, and they don't show any signs of slowing down at all.
No, they don't. And they don't really have nights off. I mean, that's what's separating the Bucks right now. When you talk about those teams that you just mentioned, that most of those teams have bad losses, and the Bucks just really don't. I think after today's win against Phoenix, I think that now makes them 32-1 against teams below 500. It's certainly around there anyway. The only loss they had was on the road in San Antonio. So unlike most other teams where they'll have this rare loss to a bad team or a random off night, the Bucks just don't do it. They're just consistently good every night. And the trend that we're seeing is that to beat the Bucks, you have to shoot the absolute lights out from three to beat them. That's pretty much the only way they've lost so far.
Yeah, looking back at their past games, it's pretty wild. Now, they had that weird loss against the Nuggets, who were on a back-to-back with everyone out, but 21-point win against the Suns, 20 against the Wizards, 13 the Hornets, 13 Bulls, 20 Nets, 5 Celtics, 26 Knicks, 21 Portland. Like, they don't just win. Like, they just make every game, like, almost a no contest very, very early. So, with the trade deadline coming up, is there anything that they need to do? Like, where are the holes on this team? Like, I can look at Wes Matthews and say, well, he's not performing all that well, but then DiVincenzo comes in and Hill comes in and Korver comes in and Brown comes in and Connaughton comes in and they can fill those gaps. Are they looking for another big man perhaps to fill in some of the Robin Lopez or Ilyasova minutes? Are they looking to do anything at all? Like, where are we looking? Will this team be active, or they just say, we're happy with where we are and let's see how it goes over the course of the year?
Yeah, look, it's going to be interesting. I think definitely what we know from Bucks GM John Horst is that he's definitely going to be working the phones, because since he's come to the Bucks, they've made a number of trades. And last year, you think obviously the Mirotić one everyone remembers from the trade deadline, but they also had the trade earlier in the season that brought in George Hill. So look, I would expect that they're going to be looking to add someone, whether or not it happens. Like, it wouldn't surprise me if the Bucks stayed pat, but I think if they're looking for anything, it might be it could be two things. So first of all, it could be a guard that can do a little bit off the dribble. You already mentioned George Hill, who's having a fantastic year as a reserve. But, you know, we do know that Eric Bledsoe has some question marks in the postseason. I don't think Bledsoe's going anywhere. I think if the Bucks are going to make a trade, it's going to be potentially the first round pick that they got in the Malcolm Brogdon sign and trade with Indiana, combined with potentially one of the young guys. So you might be looking at a DJ Wilson or a Sterling Brown, two of the young guys that really just aren't getting in the rotation because the Bucks are so deep. The other interesting sort of asset, I guess, that the Bucks have is the $7 million contract of Ersan Ilyasova, which is really the only sort of mid-level deal that the Bucks have that could move. That's going to be an expiring at the end of this season. Or there's certainly a team option that you could turn that into an expiring. So those are the options that they have to move. I think some of the guys that we've seen out in the market that the Bucks would love, along with everyone else, is someone potentially a versatile wing that can shoot the ball, do a little bit offensively and defend. Obviously, Robert Covington is the number one man. Because if you're the Bucks, you have to be thinking, we're going to have a long run here. We're going to be playing through to late May, hopefully June. And what do those teams have, particularly those LA teams have? They have Paul George, LeBron James, Anthony Davis, Kawhi Leonard. They have big wings, the guys that you're going to need multiple bodies to defend. And I think if I'm looking at a weakness defensively for the Bucks, they do have the number one paint defense and number one rim protection in the league. But out on the perimeter, they are a little bit susceptible. And a guy like Ersan Ilyasova, who's playing major minutes, maybe could be a little bit exposed in those matchups.
Yeah, that was the question I was going to ask you next. Is it, they're so far ahead of everyone else at the moment in the league, but you know, what is the thing that could trip them up? And you know, wing defense is a tough thing to do, and that is what separates those, you know, great teams. They always have those elite wings: Kevin Durant, Kawhi Leonard, LeBron. You go back through all the past champions. Like, it's having an elite player on the wing that becomes really tough to stop when things get serious at the pointy end of the playoffs. And while the Bucks have their guy in Giannis there and Chris Middleton filling that role there in terms of stopping that other player, that is a tough one. I agree with you about the Eric Bledsoe. I don't think that he is going to be dealt. He's always the name that comes up first because of the, you know, the issues in against the Celtics in the playoffs for many years and how he struggles there. And people just think he's trash, but he's been really good again this regular season. And I think the Bucks will, they're not going to, it's going to be hard for him to get an upgrade over Bledsoe without giving up a lot to do that. So I agree that he's not going to be moved. And all those names that you mentioned seem to be the ones that would be likely to move if anything is going to transpire with this squad. Is there anything else that you think that could trip them up? Is it Giannis's free throw shooting, which has been abominable this season? Is it is it 3-point shooting? Like, is there anything else apart from that wing defender that could trip this team up? They look to be hurtling towards a title at this point.
Yeah, and just the one last quick note on the defense. We've seen against the Clippers and also the Lakers, we've seen that Bud has been really willing to go to Wes Matthews to defend a guy like Kawhi Leonard or defend a guy like LeBron, which looks like a really tough matchup on paper, but he's been surprisingly good in the matchups against those bigger guys. So he's a guy that Bud trusts defensively, so maybe it's just a case of sliding all those guys up and you feel pretty good about yourself. But I think, you know, I mean, everyone's at the moment, I think if you're a Bucks fan, feeling pretty anxious about Giannis's free throw shooting, it has been a problem. And for a guy that needs to live there in the playoffs, it's a concern. And it certainly hurt the Bucks in last year's Eastern Conference Finals against the Raptors. But I think the other thing is, you look at the three-point shooting, Eric Bledsoe, we already spoke about, not known as a good three-point shooter, but he's up at around 35%. He's shooting the ball really well, but Brook Lopez isn't. And he's below 30%, one of the probably the premier paint defender in the league right now. Had 9 blocks today against Phoenix. But the problem is, if you're going to just surround Giannis with four shooters, it's going to get stagnant in the playoffs. If the idea is just give the ball to Giannis and let him either drive and finish or kick out to the shooters if they're not making the three. So that's why the other option outside of a wing defender at the trade deadline, you look at some of the guards that are around. I know JJ Redick is a name that's floating around. Luke Kennard is another name that's been floated around by Bucks fans. On a smaller scale, Derrick Rose, I don't think that there's that much excitement about acquiring him, but maybe the Bucks think that they do need another guy off the dribble that can do some stuff, because you know, that's where they will miss Malcolm Brogdon, if anywhere, in the postseason.
It is really exciting times for Milwaukee at the moment, and it's going to continue, it seems like, along that way and into the playoffs. And the Bucks, they can taste success coming. Kane, you're going to cover it all for us over on Locked On Bucks. Thanks for jumping on Locked On NBA with me.
Anytime, man.
And that will do it for another episode of Locked On NBA. You can subscribe to this podcast and all podcasts right across the Locked On Podcast Network on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, and on Spotify. And if you could leave us a 5-star review, that would be fantastic. Follow me on Twitter at @RedRock_Bball and the network at Locked On NBA Net. Guys, we are done here. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.